Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back. I wanted to make sure that we're good to go and ready to start our show. And what we're going to do is we're going to finish up part three of our series about trauma PTSD and how that grossly negatively affects the person and the comorbidities of having trauma PTSD. And this is for part of the Mark's Madness series. I haven't been back in a while. I had to take some time off to get things taken care of. And it's a lot of whatnot offline that have to be taken care of. The number to call in the show is 515-602-9765. Cash App, Love Offerings, or $ ISDC Coaching, $ Don Diva Coaching, $ Team Role Online, $ Talk Radio Diva with Talk Radio Diva, myself, and it's the power to do more. And you may call 833-IMCC, 833 for my appointment, or 833-BOOK-ME-TOO, and that's for children, adolescents, young adults, and Team World Online. Again, you can go to imccoaching.com, dondivacoaching.com, or teamworld.online, or IMCC for your special appointment. So, now, like I was trying to tell you guys, we were talking about the comorbidities of PTSD. We'll do a little brief once over of actually everything that we have talked about. So we have a criminal overview since it's been a couple of days and I took some time off. So again, like I said, welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. All right. So when we talked about post-traumatic stress and what it actually is and everything else, we understood that it's a traumatic event or something that is, or someone who has been affected negatively by that. And when we talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, we're talking about levels and layers of things that actually grossly negatively affect us. And that's up to including negative, divisive, abusive, psychopaths, sociopaths, or life-altering or detrimental levels of abuse, torment, provoke, and gaslight. Y'all know that, deal with that, with the narcissistic, sociopath, wealthy, well-connected, billionaire, millionaires, and people who are just disgusting, miserable people. They need to be handled, expedited, and that's something that I have to handle offline. But again, like I told you guys, you know, when you're dealing with people who are just absolutely demonic, disgusting, miserable, low down, have nothing else better to do, they'll affect you any way they can, including up to your businesses. So with that being said, trauma PTSD can be afflicted by anybody. And what we're talking about is chronic gut changes and things like that. And part of this series and webinar of March Madness is to stop the madness and be able to bring it back in and allow us to understand what trauma PTSD is and those that get off on inflicting it or those who are unprofessional misconduct laying up with the rights of abusive people. And this is one of the things that we had to talk about before, about experiencing traumatic events or traumatic people or even workplace violence, times of Me Too type violence, or things that can be grossly negatively affecting us in business and things like that. And, you know, I hate to be belligerent or anything like that because there's a lot of belligerent, nasty, out of order, trifling, disgusting, miserable people in this world. I would not want to be one of those types of people. And then when you have toxic shame, toxic blamers, who get mad at a person who is defending themselves from egregious levels of loss, economic, financial, source of control. You can't call anybody belligerent for that, can we? So you know how I feel about all those different things and word belligerent. So I helped everybody Google it earlier, so I want you guys to understand that that word and terminology doesn't sit well with me. I had a nasty out-of-order trifling police department, Pensacola Police Department to be exact, that was belligerent, nasty out-of-order trifling, racist, and misconduct laid in that created a level of trauma PTSD for me. And when I tell you that, it's something that I'll never forget and never forget is the fact that I actually fell in the truth forever today and it actually grossly negatively affected my business. But being the success that I am and the success story that I want you guys to see is that I learned that, you know, the devil doesn't stop even if it's in a badge. The devil doesn't stop even if it's somebody who's in politics. It doesn't stop even if it's somebody you're related to or if you're married to one. So when we think about all those different things, those are traumatic events, correct? So when we think about the avoidance of nightmares and the comorbidities that happen with trauma PTSD, we have to get into the actual sustenance in the subject matter and understand it from that nomenclature. So when we talk about difficulty developing and maintaining relationships, we talk about trouble controlling or regulating emotions or people who let the traumatized trigger the emotions and upset that you don't normally have. or character of walls that you don't normally have, but reactive abuse syndrome can cause that. And then on top of that, feeling of distrust in general, people with PTSD or PTSD end up feeling like that, especially when their trust mechanisms or trust values or trust factors have been directly negatively affected and things like that. So when we think about the significant trust issues towards the world or others, it's because they've been violated multiple times. And when I mean they, it's me, you, me, the, us, all of us. And we think about all these things and handling of gross negligence and gross misconduct, just like the police department that I had to deal with. It's a level of gross misrepresentation and gross misdocumentation. And then on top of that, having levels and layers of people who pay therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists to do me wrong and dirty. But the thing is, my federal records actually saved my life, and luckily it was documented as a baby, so there was no issues and problems. But I want people to understand those difficulties in childhood and adulthood is actually what has bred me to be a very strong, resilient person. And when I tell you guys about comorbidities of trauma PTSD, it comes from a level and layer of failure to intervene, failure to interview, and failure to protect. And that's what I meant by the police department and levels of federal agency and government that I went to about the issues and whatnot. And especially when it's wealthy, well-connected narcs that were involved in all this, it really caused me a level of egregious loss. And it just really affected negatively my child and my businesses and things like that. But again, like I told you guys, there has to be a level of resiliency and a resiliency factor that you have to have in order to be able to go on and move on from that, even if you don't get justice. So with that being said, we think about dissociative symptoms and brain's defenses and trying to protect itself. And your noggin is the only thing you have. Your brain is your CPU. So when we think about this, people may struggle with a level of concentration or disconnected from the world around them. It's kind of like being in a fog. You don't feel like you belong there, even though it's like having imposter syndrome. You tend to think that you're not capable of doing something until you do it. So the thing is, when you have cognitive dissonance, it's your brain splitting into trying to cope with something that your brain was not permitted to cope with naturally. So when we think about this in therapy and when someone is diagnosed with PTSD, it's a long process. And then on top of that, an effort for a therapist and a patient to begin to have a level of understanding that we're working together here hand in hand to make sure that you're feeling better and being able to get to a point of therapeutic, or at least where if you have a lifetime to see someone and things like that, then you're able to be better taken care of and things like that. And then on top of that, PTSD is a precursor of CPTSD, especially when it's chronic failures to intervene, failures to protect. And that's not belligerence by saying, hey, you failed to protect me, you failed to protect my daughter, you failed to protect me all the way around, you dropped the ball on this one. So when we think about this, it creates a level of nightmares, night tremors and terrors and things like that. And when we talk about symptoms of all that, those are additional symptoms that can happen from trauma, PTSD, or failure to intervene, failure to protect. So when we think about gross misconduct, when we think about the DSM-5, and we think about the levels of things that a patient client should have a level of trust and not a level of mistrust. But if you have a bad therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, it's not capable of doing their job and they're a whole quack, instead of someone who should be a specialist working with you, then you get a level of misdiagnosis, misdocumentation, things like that. That's actually happened to me at one point in time when I was going through it. But when my doctors realized I was only Asperger's functioning, they were like, wow, really? I can't believe this is happening. And I'm like, yeah, I did. They're like, I'm surprised you're still standing. I'm like, I have no choice. I have to go and continue to go on whether I want to or not. You know, and then on top of that, that's the level of resilience that I was brought up with. You can't let things stop you. You can't let things, you know, damage your life to the point that you no longer function like a normal human being, or at least try to function as best you can and deal with the coping mechanisms that you have to develop and things like that. So we're going to talk about coping mechanisms in a minute. And I wanted to go share something with you guys. You know, we're going to talk about the symptoms afterwards after we go over this, but I want you guys to understand that PTSD doesn't only affect soldiers, it can affect you too. So I went over a little bit of this type of understanding of this the last time, but I wanted to make sure we got everything down pat and that you guys are real refreshed about everything. And this March Madness, Understanding PTSD, Part 3. So many people associate post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, with combat soldiers. And when we think about that, many suffer from PTSD and don't even know it or don't even notice the signs until their marriages are on the front or their marriages are over, or the level layers of their spouse didn't catch it, or their spouse was the creator of more and more trauma and PTSD. So when we think about the ability to deal with trauma and stress varies from person to person, it does. When I think about when a person has to go and handle these levels of trauma and stress and things like that, hey, welcome, come on. And when we think about the levels of long-term effects and how considerably more fragile the person is mentally when they go through trauma PTSD or CPTSD, there's a level layer of serious PTSD symptoms, flashbacks, and form of relief, reliving the event or, you know, rehashing the event or what they call rumination. And, you know, when you have a level of chronic stress, anything can trigger it. It can be people who go out their way to trigger it. And sometimes, like I tell people all the time, I'm not your lab rat guinea pig to test your psychological antics and buffoonery on or offline. And I tell people all the time, you know, when a person has suffered a traumatic event, the last thing they need is somebody abusing them online and offline. I've had that happen. So when we think about these experiences, including pain and sweating and trembling, we think about angina pectoris, and we think about levels of what stress does to the body, and we talked about that the last time. So when we think about hypervigilance, we think about a level of over-alertness. It's not paranoia. What I like to call is pronoia, which is you're proactive in having a good day, but your hypervigilance is outweighing the level of feeling any type of safe or any type of comfort. And that reminds the sufferer of the traumatic event, and like it happened yesterday, even if it could happen 10 years ago, that flashback is fresh. It's like sitting in a Rolodex in your head. And when I'm telling you it's like sitting in a Rolodex, it's like coming off of, like I explained to you guys before, a high roller coaster of this, and then coming down the slope, and then going up down again, coming down to the slope. So what your brain is being taught is that it's coming to a slippery slope of up, down, all around, like Pooh Bear, except for you never come off the roller coaster. And then it's like addicts, when they get high, they're chasing that same high they had in the beginning, right? So when they're super duper high, all they wanted to do is stay at that level, right? But when you're thinking about trauma PTSD, nobody wants to stay at that level. Nobody wants to stay at this high level and then go down and have this up, down, all around, up, down, all around, all the time. It's exhausting. And then it taxes the body. And then even at that, it's possible for that person to re-envision the traumatic event all over again once they're triggered and upset, which is where I've had to check myself on social media plenty of times when I'm in a moment of really reliving the moment. I have to say, oh, hold on, bring it back in, bro. Y'all not going to get me out of character because it's not how I normally act. So when we think about reactive abuse syndrome, that's what it is. So when we think about hypervigilance, think of it as that example, scanning a crowd for dangerous people, sitting in certain places at home to avoid being seen or heard, or going in, or not being seen by through windows, or over-reliance on weapons or things like that, or levels of being invaded by bad guys, or if you've had home invasions like I have, or levels of disrespectful misconduct, like maybe it's a divisiveness on behalf of police department because they failed to intervene, and then my ex was actually a police officer, and then the other ex was actually a federal agent at one point in time, and his father was one as well. It became a level and layer of divisiveness, force control, abusiveness, and it caused a level and layer of my view of the police department is different. Although, let me tell you something, they've been doing a very good job, so let me paint them in a bad light all the way. They have been very, very proactive in trying to reacclimate me back to being normalized with police departments. They know I don't like cop calling. They know I don't like calling police. They know I'm not the type of person to be like, oh, so-and-so did this and I'm here. You know, it's like, if it's not affecting me, what does it got to do with me, homie? So when we're talking about levels and layers of that, they're working hard in the sense of trying to reduce the trauma and the stress. They do ride by to let me know, hey, I'm here. I'm not here to pester you, but I'm riding by, you know, and it makes me feel a little bit better. And, you know, I'm trying my best to I want to explain it in the best way of a traumatized person. I'm doing the best that I can to retrust them within reason. I'll probably never fully retrust a police department, a sheriff's department ever again, but the fact that they go out their way to try to work things out in some ways, as far as driving by, making sure I'm good, that helps. You know, I don't like to deal with them up close and personal because of egregious levels of gross misconduct of some of them. But a lot of them have apologized, and then the ones that didn't need to apologize are the ones I'm like, what are you apologizing for? That one needs to, you know, and it's just a level of later, like it's too late to apologize now. But I want you guys to understand from a trauma victim standpoint, it will make anybody afraid of police at one point in time once they've been through events and things like that, and especially if their ex was one or their ex's father was one, which is the case that I had. So when we think about this, the person suffering from hypervigilance is consumed with the idea that something is going to happen or already on ready, on hand, like, when is it going to happen? Who sent you? You know, things like that. And when I tell you that I had to work through a week of safe lives, although it's been very hard because I have a level of offline things that are going on that have created an unsafe life anyway. And those are things that have to be dealt with offline in the community and address the IT antics and the provoke and the torment every day, all day. I went through last week 4 or 5 resets because he wanted to tamper IT and play these provoke that aren't games. I finally had to tell somebody so that it could stop happening. It finally stopped happening, and thank God for that. so that I could actually get some work done. And I decided, you know, I was going to take the time to sit down with you guys and do this presentation with you all. So thank you so much for being here. But I wanted to give you guys examples of traumatic events and things like that. And being a life coach, wellness coach, and divorce coach, I want you guys to understand how important and imperative it is to understand you guys. And when you come in my office at Don Diva Coaching Team World Online or IMCC.com or IMCCcoaching.com, you'll be able to understand it from that perspective and that you're in good hands. It's kind of like, what was it, Drake from State Farm, or you want Jake from State Farm or something like that. And it's like you're in good hands. So the assurance for you is that I'm here as your life coach, your wellness coach, your divorce coach, your business coach, and things like that. And it's the power to do more to make sure that you guys are comfortable sitting in my office. So, again, call in live 515-602-9765. And Cash App Love Offerings, they're accepted, and they help me to build business. And that's IMCC Coaching, Don Diva Coaching, and then Team World Online. Then also Talk Radio Diva, and you can go to talkradiodiva.com, and you can put your love offering and the love note in there, letting me know where it's supposed to go, and I'll put it in that direct account and things like that. And again, it's for the power to do more and bring you guys the newest, latest content and things like that. And do things to make sure that you guys have a good March Madness level presentation. And again, like I said, I took time off, but it is the 16th, and we are ready to go. So with that being said, I want to talk about the levels and layers of it. Does PTSD doesn't affect just soldiers, it affects other people. So when we think about irritability, aggressive behavior, or what people want to call belligerent when you're defending yourself and reactive abuse syndrome, there's two different of the belligerent word, right? I absolutely hate it because at one point in time, the police department was like, oh, you're being belligerent. I said, no, I'm not. I'm telling you that you guys have crossed the line and you've done a lot of egregious things. You've talked to me in your kind of way. You've been racist. You've been egregious in misconduct. You've actually done some aggressive things to me, and you have the nerve to call me belligerent. I told them I could Google it. Just like they told me to Google it at 101 IONUS at one point in time, I was like, Google ethics, Google misconduct, and then you'll look at y'all's picture, and it'll be right here in the dictionary. So when we talk about irritability and aggressive behavior, that's different from belligerent or warlike behavior or not letting something go because it's crossing the line or something is crossing the line and causing you to have to go and reiterate or revalidate what's going on because you're being invalidated or intimidated or coerced or provoked or gaslit. The things have been happening to me, especially with this house and this egregious level of misconduct and abusiveness and divisive tortures, behaviors of the IT and cable company. I'll be going to court with Fox Cable and AT&T subsequently over that. So when we think about altered thought, that is something of cognitive dissonance that we need to talk about because our altered thoughts become a level of shame. We think about levels of guilt, anger, and also those are things in common with a level layer of how that happens. And when we think about levels and layers of divisiveness and abusiveness, and we think about levels of disorderly misconduct, and we think about levels and layers of symptoms from range from annoying to life-altering or levels of detrimental to where you don't function properly or your vital signs go wonky. And I'm dealing with that kind of right now with that situation where the vital signs are up and down because of levels and layers of stress. And when you have chronic fatigue from a level of layer of chronic PTSD and PTSD symptoms and things like that, from dealing with that, it took a long time to get to a place of zen and an art of meditation and art and majesty of being calm. And a lot of that is where your thoughts get altered about life, your perception of life, your levels of behavior, emotion get grossly negatively affected. So I want people to understand that. So when we think about these symptoms from range to life-altering things such as levels and layers of things that inflate or outside levels of combat that can happen to you, like sexual abuse, the sexual abuse is more common in children than any of us would like to acknowledge or even as adults. In my case, it was as an adult and then as a teenager, and it happened to me in high school, and then post after that in relationships. And when we think about it poses a serious threat to ourselves and others, it's a level of 5150 of others' actions towards us instead of us being a 5150, 5250, or a 5350, which is what some people have been towards me. And in that system of reacting from a level of anger, hurt, guilt, frustration, stress, and things like that, an abuser, a narc, a provoker, a DA, a domestic abuser, or what they call it, EPV, an extremely emotionally violent person, or, extreme psychological violence type of person who's inclined to abuse, that toxic shame, that toxic blame, that victim shame can go deep into your bones and create a level of animosity and hostility. And I will tell you one thing about it. Anger management does work. It works in the sense of you learn how to process the anger and upset without taking it out on anybody else. Although it is a maddening experience when you actually voluntarily do it, or you go through a level or layer of DBT training, which is dialectical brain training, or CBT training, which is the cognitive therapy and things like that, and being able to practice the levels and layers of things that you need to do, and psychological therapies that help. So when we think about sexual abuse, we think about emotional abuse, this is the kicker. A lot of people don't understand that emotional abuse does more damage than physical abuse. People will be like, what are you talking about? You mean you can take combat hits and be all right? It doesn't mean that it's any lesser, but it's far worse because you cannot erase the mind. You cannot erase what has been etched into the mind data bank, and it's things that they're like, oh, you know what? I'm mad about beep, 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 beep. And by the time it's all said and done, there's a level and layer of frustration so deep within you that anger management ends up being required, although you didn't need to in the beginning, but you'll see that anger management does help. So we're going to talk about anger management in the next session after this one. I just want to make sure that we do the whole wrap-up session of this and this part so that we can get to a point that we can talk about the levels and layers of type of therapy that work, including rec therapy with relational, emotive, you know, correction therapy and things like that, things that will help us, or cognitive therapy that helps us to understand even in relationships and marriages. Because when I tell you the bounds of a marriage can be tested from trauma, PTSD, it can. If you truly love each other and have unconditional love for each other, there's nothing that can stop you from loving that person through their trauma and their PTSD. A lot of people be like, oh, I'm not going to put up with this, that, and the other third. I'm like, you don't know what love is. Love is kind. Love is understanding. Love understands when you're going through something, and love helps, and love heals. So when we think about light drives out darkness, correct? Then so does love. Love drives out darkness, correct? So when we think about this, what goes on in the dark comes to the light. So sometimes you got to shed a light on the things that happen to you that break you so that you can come back fully together and begin to heal and go to a level of healing this nation and the soul of the nations on this line. And when we think about the soul of this nation, my soul is with me being and keeping my oath to protect against enemies, foreign and domestic, but as well as those that are intimate and personal as well. When we think about emotional abuse, the mind can only take so much, correct? When we think about this, it changes in a negative way, and that's where cognitive dissonance or things like that end up happening. But we think about emotional abuse can have effects that last for years after the abuse is gone. So that's where your body and your mind remembers. It's like that book. Your body actually remembers. It's kind of like when they tell you to do something when you're trying to do therapy, and you're just like, oh, okay, let me go ahead and do this, and they're telling you to touch your head. Now, touch your shoulders, and all of them are kind of BS, right? It's not BS, but in the mind of the patient who's sitting in front of me in my office, they're like, oh, this is a bunch of BS. But until you try the grounding exercises, the meditation exercises, then you'll begin to realize, oh, I kind of feel better. Oh, I don't feel like punching a hole in the wall. You know, those things like that that actually can happen, because when you have that much bottled anger and upset guilt, shame, or you're being toxically guilted for feeling a righteous level of anger and upset, then it does not end up getting channeled correctly, which is considered emotional abuse or extreme psychological violence. And those things are federally outlawed and things like that, but people still do it, and we all know that. But this can happen to adults as well as children, so I want you guys to understand that. Then we think about physical abuse or other violence. And regular physical abuse or regular emotional abuse and violence can cause post-traumatic stress disorder or chronic post-traumatic stress disorder, especially if it's not properly being assessed by a specialist, not a basic, regular, everyday, run-of-the-mill general psychiatrist until you've seen a specialist, then you go back to the regular psychiatrist, psychologist, but you'll still have a specialist as a team to be able to make the effort to do what you got to do and make sure that the person is being protected in every which way there is, including proper diagnosis and proper med management in the beginning, and then after that you can possibly wean off it, or some people, you are lifetime on meds. It just is what it is, and there's nothing wrong with that. And everybody knows I am a staunch advocate for medication to a certain degree. I'm a staunch advocate for medication, pharma, and things like that. I'm never not going to do that. So I want you guys to understand that medicine is important, especially when you're dealing with levels and layers of the brain breaking, and it's like up the hood. And then at that point, your brain says, I'm out. You can sit here, but I'm out. I'm just going to go and retreat. I'm not coming out until everything is back to normal. So it's just like combat stress for being in the sand from war. After a while, your body is like, you know what? Peace out. I'm going to let you sit here, and you can be like that, wrapped up. So at that point, your body remembers everything, and then you end up being all discombobulated, and then you have to be what we call systematically, programmatically brought back into normal. It's like ET phone home. You there? Hey, anybody there? Echo. You know, it's like, okay, I know you're traumatized, but come back home. Come on. You know, you've got to get your brain to work. So when we think about stressful experiences, it can be a cliff. It can be a level of near life-threatening, life-endangering situations. It can be a level of failure to intervene, failure to protect. It can cause trauma, PTSD. Or it can cause a level of health issues of a loved one, or levels of chronic sickness in the family, or levels and layers of a person acting sick, pathologically, sociopathic towards you, and creating a level of trauma over a period of years from abusive divisiveness or insidious abuse. Or we can talk about a level of seeing someone shot, someone stabbed, someone cut, someone in a car accident. Or we can think about a violent crime or a robbery or rape or things like that, rape, sodomy, things that have happened to me. So when we think about this, a stressful experience can actually trigger those effects of PTSD, PTSD. Then we think about the level and layer of mental illness that can actually arise from behavioral health, emotional behavioral health, and then a level of mental health deficits and issues and disorders that arise from a level of stressfulness. And the sufferer can be successful for stressful events or a series of unfortunate, completely complicit, divisive, abusive, pathologically abusive events. Or you can think about a level of PTSD as a common challenge that arises from all of the above. So when we think about this, if you've never served in the military or with the police, trauma can be nearly found everywhere in society or the four corners of this world. So when we think about this, watching a loved one die or experience a mugging or a level of rape or sodomy, rape or any type of psychological abuse or insidious of pathological abuse or workplace violence or abuse or things like that, that can cause post-traumatic stress disorder. These same people, they've actually gone hopeful at work because they're so mad at their job, but they don't know how to go channel the right energy. Then they go back to work, and then they shoot up the place, and you're just like, whoa, I didn't know so-and-so was like this. You didn't possibly know because you didn't see the signs. The signs are there. So when we think about this, it's a common challenge and things like that. In this day and age, a level of symptoms can arise at any point in time. The thing is, what you want to do is reduce and mitigate the symptoms and stop inflicting symptoms. So that's why PTSD doesn't only affect soldiers, it affects everybody. And when we talk about symptoms, we think about overwhelming and intense negative feelings in association with past traumatic events. We think about nightmares and traumatic events. We think about difficulty creating or maintaining relationships. So just like everything I said. And then severe disconnect from people, flashbacks, persistent negative thoughts about the world, people, or yourself, or people causing you to feel bad about yourself, hypervigilance, guilt, or shame, or a level of feeling like survivor's guilt and things like that, and we'll talk about that. And then we'll talk about self-destructive behaviors or self-sabotage or people who will sabotage you or use your reaction and your emotional levels of deficits against you like they did to me. So I want you guys to understand what that means. So when we talk about different types of PTSD, we talked about complex PTSD, and we talked about CTPSD and PTSD, and we talked about the levels and layers of what Dr. Tracy was talking about, and then trouble controlling or regulating emotions and whatnot. So let's go into the other part of this. Comorbidities, anxiety, depression, and substance abuse are most common types of comorbidities of PTSD. And it's estimated that 80% of people with PTSD or trauma or have another co-occurring psychiatric disability at some point in time, because if you're not seen or it's not being intervened in a good manner or a professional manner, not in a level of what I call a level of egregious levels of failure to treat, failure to intervene, failure to protect, then you have a level layer of a possibility of psychiatric disability permanent because of trauma and the trauma being inflicted by a bunch of quacks who didn't know what they were doing. I've been through that. But I want you guys to understand that resiliency factor has a lot to do with being able to not go into risky behavior. And let's discuss this. People with PTSD are more likely to engage in a level of risky behavior or disruptive behavior because that is what all they know. And then on top of that, it's triggered by trauma, and doing something that might lead to trauma is difficult to understand. And doing self-deprecating or self-sabotaging or what we call outside of that realm, which is people who are agents of provocateur or sabotage. So it's common belief that people with PTSD turn to these behaviors as a way to escape symptoms of PTSD, especially intrusion. So when we think about this, we're talking about numbing. We're talking about getting high, drinking alcohol, smoking cigarettes, things that I don't do. But the thing is, there are people who actually turn to drugs and alcohol and literally numb themselves from the trauma and use that as a coping mechanism, which is what we call a healthy coping mechanism. And then it helps them to avoid thinking about the original trauma or doing the work that is required of a person once they've been through trauma. So when we think about this, we think about the levels and layers of the original trauma and what is associated with the trauma, and then doing self-medication or self-levels of risky behavior. And when we think about that, we're thinking about gambling, drinking, drunk driving, aggression, drugs, or unsafe sex with strangers, extreme sports, or regard for self-protection, or self-preservation. So when we think about this, Dr. Naomi Padilla, an assistant professor at the National Center for Boston University, is quoted as saying that a level and layer of individual PTSD exposure to new stressful events will often prolong their symptoms or even make them worse. And this is what I told you about removing people who are detrimental to your emotional health, your mental health. And then on top of that, people who are detrimental to your progress or progression of being therapeutic or possibly getting therapeutic, that includes up to a poisonous environment or a level of violations, hate level violations, civil rights violations, things that have to be addressed with lawyers and lawsuits and things like that subsequently because of reckless endangerment or failure to protect or gross miscarriage of justice or malfeasance or misdocumentation. So when we think about providers should ask a trauma-exposed veteran or non-veteran about reckless behavior to make sure that they're not engaging in harmful behaviors and things like that that should make PTSD symptoms worse or even more chronic. When we come to treating PTSD, a therapist will actually address risky behaviors, and then on top of that, patient may be engaging to help reduce the level of chronic PTSD or bad coping mechanisms that people resort to. When we think about PTSD and relationships, this is the kicker here. It's no secret that PTSD can strain a marriage or relationship, and particularly with a spouse or a partner. And then with that, many cases of strong marriages unable to withstand a level of the effect of severe PTSD, especially if you're not fully committed to the work that it takes as a couple and couples therapy to do levels and layers of groundwork and footwork that it takes to be able to go and restore that relationship back to normal or as close to normal as you possibly can get. And there are times when people are unable to resolve inherent issues with PTSD, which can put a strain on a marriage if you're not fully committed to that person or don't have unconditional love for that person. So when we think about a level of 2019, Megan Drillinger wrote a piece of a Healthline called 6 Things I Learned from Dating Someone with PTSD. And this was a level and layer of understanding dating and being married to someone with PTSD and trauma. In the article, she explains, for 3 years, I was in a relationship with a person who, and my ex was a decorated combat veteran who was in Afghanistan 3 times. And that took a toll on his soul and was heartbreaking. And then when the person went on to say, a level and layer of, in this, being a partner with someone who has PTSD can be challenging, frustrating. Then on top of that, for many reasons, you want to take away their pain, but you cannot help them. And in some ways, they have to help themselves. And then you're dealing with your own guilt at needing to care for yourself, too, and having all the answers. But you often have to come to a grip with reality that the condition that can't be loved out of someone is the condition that has to be helped through medical intervention and levels and layers of therapeutic work. And then on top of that, with a lot of love, it helps reduce the symptoms. So I want you guys to understand that from my point of view, I had an experience with a soldier. I dated on and off for 15 years, and the other one I had dated for a level out of 8 years and off and on. And when we talk about a level layer of another 10-year relationship, and he wasn't a veteran, but he was an actual fed. And when I tell you that there's a level layer of when you watch somebody you love go down the hill and they're looking like not the same person they used to be, not the person you used to love, not the person you were in love with, and you're no longer in love with, but you get back together the second or third time, you start to realize the level and layer of trauma and PTSD that's within that person, but then there's no excuse for your trauma narrative to abuse someone else. This is where we get into a marriage to be tested and where a marriage or relationship or a fiancé and a getting remarried relationship can be tested to the point that you no longer can be with that person because they have changed so egregiously and egregiously caused you so much trauma and you don't have the answer how to fix them. Sometimes the best thing you can do is by walking away and let them figure it out or hit rock bottom and then go seek some help and get an intervention before they actually start doing the inner work that's required. But sometimes that takes losing someone. And again, you guys can call in live at 515-602-9765, Cash App, Love App, and Love Offerings to the application of $INTCCoaching, $DonDivaCoaching, Team Love Online, and Talk Radio Diva. And with the power to do more, they'll be able to give you more exclusive content and things like that that we were going to be presenting for March Madness. So with that being said, I want to get back to the PTSD and trauma. I just want to make sure we did that. And then you can call 833-INCC, 833-4MY-APPOINTMENT to book your appointment at Don Diva Coaching, and then 833-BookMeCheaperTeamWorld.online for children, adolescents, young adults, for those of y'all that need to go and get those. You can go to book your appointment at IMCCCoaching.com, DonDivaCoaching.com, and TeamWorld.online, and IMCC responsibility appointments with myself. Eventually, I'll have my schedules where it's going to be exclusive, different from my other staff. So with that being said, and this level of the groundwork and the footwork that we're doing about this is that in that story of dealing with that phobia, I had to learn that this person is who they are. They're not going to change. They have changed so much that it's not the same person I fell in love with a long time ago. It's not the same person that I had wanted to get back married to. And things like that, it was just a level and layer of, like, we're done. I cannot deal with you. I can't deal with the stresses that you create. And you said something that was teaching her to me. The woman I was with a long time ago, she understood me. She understood all the issues and problems I had. And she really understood me. I'm like, yeah, she did, because she actually loved you at some point in time, just like I did. The thing is, there's a point where your trauma does not give you an excuse to be as despicable and disruptive and emotionally abusive as you possibly can be. And then on top of that, you don't take your drama and narrative out on me. And with that being said, let's turn it into a level of where relationships, it's the same exact thing, whether a person's a veteran or not. A person's trauma narrative is no excuse for abusing yourself, girlfriend, boyfriend, or anybody, what have you, if you're in same-sex relationship or non-sequential levels of LGBTQIA, or if you are actually heterosexual like I am, and you're dealing with the level of a heterosexual relationship and someone's acting as torturous and abusive as they possibly can. You're taking out your trauma on me, and I'm not your human punching bag, is what I'm trying to get you guys to understand. So when you think about supporting a loved one with PTSD, that being said, it's extremely important to know what supporting someone with PTSD does not mean that you're responsible for making them better or their behavior. You're not responsible for their divisive behavior, and you're not responsible for their abusive behavior either. So if you have a relationship with someone who has PTSD, you can't heal them without support. You cannot heal them without making the world easier by getting a level of intervention. And then, but your loved one should seek professional help on their own. And be ready to do that and get the tools that are provided with a level of life coach, wellness coach, health coach, and then on top of that, getting a proper diagnosis by an actual MD, ARMG, or PA, and things like that, and then seeing the LSW, MSW, or a person like a life coach is interim gap in between all of that so that you can get the level and layer of support that you need. That was the disorder. So with that being said, there are some things that you might want to help to ease the burden and the pain to understand that PTSD is real. That's one. And perhaps that the first step with someone with PTSD is acknowledging that it is a real disorder and that that's a real symptom to have. And then on top of that, if there are mental disorders that come along with it that are difficult to understand or relate to, sit down with a life coach, wellness coach, health coach, who can help you after you've been properly diagnosed and things like that, because life coaches, wellness coaches, health coaches, divorce coaches do not diagnose unless they're an MD. That's something I'm moving towards at some point in time as a forensic psychiatrist, psychologist, and I'll be doing that here soon so that I'll be able to go and make sure that I do everything full circle within my clinic. But until then, I'll be under the guise of a doctor in LSW, MSW. So when we think about that, it's very real and very debilitating and things like that. And mental disorders are difficult to understand in themselves, but when you have behavioral health, mental health, and emotional health, and things like that, understanding the behaviors, and then talking about the emotional side, then you're bridging the gap, and then you're going to close it in with the pyramid of understanding the levels and layers that PTSD is sitting there right at the key point. You got to figure out how to fall off from emotional and behavioral, and then connecting the dots, being therapeutic right down at the bottom. And then you've got to give the person room to talk. Let them have their trauma narrative. And we talk about trauma narrative because if you don't let a person be validated in their trauma, and when somebody has PTSD, it doesn't mean always willing or able to discuss their trauma. Some of it's embarrassing. Some of it is humiliating. I have some of those situations where it's so embarrassing, it's so humiliating and disgusting what was done to me to where, like, I wouldn't want to talk about it because it just makes me mad, and it's just no way for me not to talk about it and get mad. So when I tell you that there's a level layer of some things that have to be talked to with a therapist to help you be mindful and stay grounded, that's what I mean by that. So when we think about resistance to talking about things, it's because there's a level of unloving or mistrust that has been instilled in that person to not trust anyone and feeling unloved or invalidated, intimidated, or being coerced or provoked or threatened in the nature that has been done to me. So I want you guys to understand that from my perspective. And then on top of that, it can render a person uncommunicative or combative and incapable of actually getting the help until they realize there's a problem. And then working with a routine and things like that and learning more about PTSD. And it can chaotic out of control level to trigger trauma flashback and those that like to trigger trauma and flashback on and offline. And then understanding that caregiving is a burden and it's a real something that you have to really be committed to with a level layer of taking care of someone struggling with mental health, emotional health, behavioral health, or chronic PTSD, comorbidities, cluster C, and things like that, not in front of cluster A and cluster B. So
So when we think about all those things, we're talking about narcissism and sociopathy and pathological abuse and things like that. That gets conflicted, and then you end up with a cluster state OCD or CPTSD or PTSD and trauma and things like that. I'm dealing with people who are cluster A's and B's, APD, or what we call ASAPD, antisocial personality disorder. And then you got the other part, which is narcissistic personality, NPD. And then you have a low layer of narcissist, which is a combination of a psychopath, sociopath, and then on top of that, a narcissist in one. So when we think about this, we think about the National Institute of Health. And like professional caregivers, such physicians and nurses and formal caregivers and things like that, typically family members and friends provide a level of layer of support system. And if your support system is solving the trauma and the PTSD, then you got to get a new support system. So we think about this. We think about advanced aging, and we think about dementia, and we think about levels of chronic fatigue syndrome and things like that can set in, or MS that can be triggered, or a level of autoimmune disorders that can be triggered from a level of trauma PTSD. And then we think about a chronic stressor and things like that, and we think about negative psychological and behavioral and physiological effects of our daily lives being affected by trauma PTSD, our level of trauma, and feeling upset and triggered and upset every day by a provoker, gaslighter, abuser, and tormentor. So we think about this study, and we think about the sentiment is staying for general, non-professional caregivers, or we talk about professional caregivers, which I've been in that role before, and things like that, and long-term care, and in long-term care facilities, which I've been in that role before as well. And then we think as a clinician and things like that, and when you work with a paraprofessional or a professional as a life coach, wellness coach, health coach, you learn these different paradigms of coaching and light, and then you begin to shed some light and breakthroughs with the person who's going through this. So to help lighten this load, if you're a caregiver, understand it's not you, it's that person, but they have to want the help, and they have to want the actual bubbles and layer of not being consumed by their PTSD symptoms, but begin to work on each symptom, verbatim, each one, and then take the time to do the things that they love and enjoy and reacclimate themselves back to normal. And that takes a lot of time, a lot of support, and a good environment. So another good solution is to find a support group and those who are cared for people who have PTSD and trauma. And then on top of that, also I told you guys about the Facebook group that I've had with others and things like that, and I joined before I had my own Facebook group, and I helped some other people with traumatic events and memories and things like that, and I didn't realize how much it helped me to help others, and then I learned how to be more resilient and have healthy coping mechanisms and continue to go and do the inner work that is required. And the thing is, like the therapist who said, I'm in therapy because I have to be present for my husband along with my actual clients, and I do the same exact thing because I want my clients to know that I'm present and I don't think about myself, I'm thinking about them. So I take off my hat of my own personal life when I see you. I want you guys to know that you're in good hands, just like all states. And then on top of that, we're going to talk about seeking professional treatment. Professional treatment is the kicker and the biggest part to professionals out there. Seeking outside help is imperative. Seeking essential help when you're going through trauma and your loved ones who are coping with PTSD is the best thing you could possibly do. Although it may feel like there's a stigma with working with professional help, but this viewpoint is becoming less common in the phenomena of embracing mental health, emotional health, and things like that, and behavioral health has become a norm now. I used to feel like a poster child for mental health until I went through a lot of stuff, and I was like, you know what, I'm okay with it, I'm going to let my superpowers, asking powers activate, and be the best different person that, and a better version of myself that I can possibly be, even in the illuminated life that I walk in now, and I've learned how to deal with my hardships. Some of them were unnecessary strain, and they were very, very, very detrimental, and some of them were very deadly, and some of them created the traumatic events that I had. So when you talk about a trauma response, I had to get some professional help myself, and I'm telling you something, I feel better now that I did that, and I'm still continuing the work, inner work, so I can be present for you all anyway. And there's no shame in seeking professional help, and I want you guys to understand that. And it's beneficial to seek therapy on top of that. Treatment for trauma PTSD is not a one-size-fits-all, because when you think about a solution for that, not everybody is the same. Therefore, your treatment and your treatment plans are going to be different with each provider and each specialist, per se, once you get the proper diagnosis, once you see the general psychiatrist, psychologist, and they're like, this is out of my ballgame, let me refer you over to a specialist, then you go see that specialist, the specialist then give you a proper diagnosis, or they'll consult someone to come sit in with you and then do this interview and see exactly what's going on with you. And then then the therapist to determine what diagnosis and treatment are appropriate for you in a plan of care that's going to happen. So if there's substance abuse present or any alcoholism or drug abuse, I don't have any of that, but I want you guys to understand that if there's ever a history or you've ever done anything to numb yourself or any of that, you'll end up still seeing someone. And if they see that you're having problems with drugs and alcohol, you won't have to go through that treatment plan or anything like that. But it's okay to say if you have a problem with drugs and alcohol, if you are dealing with that, I'm in a judgment-free zone. We've all goofed off in our life. We've all partied like a rock star in our life. But there is nothing to numbing yourself and coping unhealthily with some trauma and PTSD or a traumatic event. And I want to reiterate that with everybody out there who's afraid to go and admit that you have problems or issues. So when we think about the treatment, we think about cognitive processing therapy, which is CPT therapy, like I told you guys, and then DBT. So we're going to start with cognitive processing therapy. This therapy is a specific type of therapy that is used on people to change the way that they view trauma. And when we think about this, it has been effective in reducing the symptoms and the comorbidities of that. Then on top of that, it has been effective in the levels of health specialists recommending this course of action for people diagnosed with a disorder or the level of chronic PTSD and PTSD. It is thought to be one of the most effective treatments available. CPT is performed over 12 sessions, if not up to 12 weeks, in a 60 to 90 minute session. And then on top of that, sessions can be either individual or in a group setting. And in group therapy, it's just like the Lakeview Center. They have group therapy sessions, and then they have other areas where you can go to with group and therapy to talk about your traumas and having talk therapy. That is one of the best things that I can ever recommend to anybody, especially in group therapy settings and being able to sit with other people who are like-minded like yourself or have been through different things. And then you won't feel like you're sitting isolated out there and you're just like a unicorn. And you're sitting out there and you're, everybody else is normal, but you're a unicorn. It's like a, okay, let me sit right here. Let me go and get with everybody else, Applejack, Rainbow Dash, and everybody else that's sitting right here, all of us out for unicorns. Let's all sit here, just, you know. So I wanted to make it light of it so that people won't take it too hard and feel bad about it. I just want you guys to understand that in order to shed light, sometimes you got to make it a little bit more lighthearted. So when we think about this, trauma changes the way a person feels about themselves and the world, often causing them a level layer of outlook that's more negative than progressive. So when we think about this type of therapy, it can help them to reduce and progress in a level of positive mindset, abundance mindset, then a scarcity mindset. And then prolonged exposure therapy, which is what we call a level of PE, which is prolonged exposure therapy, PET or PET. So when we think about this, an avoidance of symptoms of PTSD therapists will sometimes use a treatment called prolonged exposure therapy. This treatment helps people confront the things that they're avoiding in increments. So basically, step by step, day by day, I'm going to figure out how I'm going to block off the little parts that are triggering upset and work these towards each increment of improvement week by week, day by day. PE is usually broken down into 15 individual sessions and lasts about 60 to 120 minutes. And the session is where the therapist asking questions, like I told you guys, doing a field interview. And then on top of that, a trauma and understanding the issues underlying and then making sure that there's a type of therapy that will induce more or less a level of calm versus a level of anxiety and stress that CPT usually does. So that helps you to go into learning anxiety-reducing coping skills and mechanisms to help you become more applicable towards breathing, grounding exercises, and things like that. And that those techniques are imaginal exposure. This is the type of exposure where a patient describes a traumatic event in present tense but stays present, but the minute they're going back into the past, then they're like, bring it back in, bring it to the present, and let's begin to think. So we think about this in vivo exposure. This is a type of exposure performed outside the therapy session where the therapist and the patient actually work together to come up with a list of things the patient has been avoiding and then begin to confront between the therapy session and in a gradual fashion. So we think about eye movement, desensitization, or reprocessing, which is called EDMR. And it's a different kind of trauma treatment, talking through traumatic events. Instead, the patient is asked to think about the traumatic event and then event while the therapist directs their eye movement. So while you're doing that, you're learning how to go and think about the eye movement. Remembering a traumatic event can help drain the emotion and negative feelings attached to it because you're beginning to start to go and look at the person's hand, but you're beginning to talk about what's going on. So you're becoming more distracted with the hand, and your eyes are starting to move with the eye coordination, hand-eye coordination movements while you're talking, and you begin to calm. You begin to see the calming effect of it. So this type of therapy is relatively new, considered a non-traditional form of therapy, but when it's considered effective when you're dealing with trauma PTSD, and then we're going to go last but not least, medications for PTSD. Again, you guys know that I'm a staunch supporter of medications and national center of PTSD. Antidepressants are sometimes effective in treating PTSD, but there's other things that have to be done. These types of medications include SSRIs, which are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SNRIs, which are serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors. Those are things that your doctors will talk to you about that will help you, and your doctor and your therapist can help you determine which medication is right for you, and if you are med-sensitive, what holistic therapies can help you. So with that being said, PTSD and healing. We're at the last stretch of this, you guys. Treatment of PTSD may not be a cure, as with most mental health disorders or mental health problems or behavioral health recovery. So when we think about this, it can be difficult, and it's not. However, many people who receive therapy see a significant life-changing, life-altering factor of positivity in their life instead of more negativity. And then it can lead to an absolution of symptoms over time. And sometimes you can eventually get to be therapeutic if you have a high resiliency, high good coping mechanism factor. And then on top of that, if you're suffering from PTSD, and if you know someone who is, you can call the levels a hotline, and I'm going to give you guys the numbers too. So the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration is available 24/7 by calling 1-800-662-HELP, and that's 1-800-662-4357. Or for veterans, the National Center for PTSD is also available by calling 1-800-273-8255, or you can reach them online at www.veteranscrisisline.net. Hotlines are a good short-term thing for when you have acute onset and things like that, but if you're really having a meltdown, go to the emergency room. They'll give you an assessment, then they give you a referral to a doctor. So when you think about this, remember, setbacks don't erase the progress, but the best results, learn all you can about PTSD and keep your focus on healing. That is the whole main focus in a support network of people, and build up that support network and environment that fosters a level and layer of drawing from the bricks that have been thrown at you or the mud that's been thrown at you. Pick off that mud, get it out of the mud, and then on top of that, throw those bricks right back, the whole boulder, and stand on top of that foundation of bricks and make a pyramid of a growth and breakthrough. So you got to trust the light, fear not. And then on top of that, become more illuminated in the better version of yourself, post-traumatic growth, post-traumatic level of trauma narrative that shows a level of healing, not going to a point of feeling like you can never get there from here. It's possible. So with that being said, let's go into this last part. And I think that will be it for today. I want to make sure that we're doing things to go and teach you stress reduction. And then on top of that, trauma and resilience. And we're going to talk about stress reduction and the purpose of it and things like that. And for you guys to understand what it means to do those type of things and positive relaxation and deep muscle relaxation therapies. We'll talk about those things tomorrow. And we'll also talk about simple levels of meditation and things like that. So those are going to be the stress reduction activities that we're going to do tomorrow. But we're going to just do this for right now in the sense of letting, I want you guys to understand trauma first and foremost before we get to the stress reducing part. Because we talked about, again, like I said, the stress on the body. But you want to be able to get to a place of resilience. And part of that is being able to do the work that is important and imperative to do. And then on top of that, overcoming that level of trauma and layer of upset. So when we think about all of this, we think about a level and layer of trying to find what works best for you. So when we think about this, we think about sleeping, eating, and sexual issues. We think about levels and layers of fear of hallucination or flashback or rumination or what we call hyperarousal or understanding your trauma. And part of that is an overwhelming level of a belief in yourself that you can get past it and get there from here. Then on top of that, we can also look at the levels and layers of what needs to be done to reduce all the harm, and then post-traumatic growth, which are the key factors of a greater level of appreciation for life, discovering a spiritual belief, and a level of better version of yourself. Then on top of that, forming a better relationship with others of value, a greater sense of discovering new options and becoming more creative, and your sense of self-worth and self-efficiency. And then on top of that, learning optimism, spiritual awareness, then creating a personal mission statement for yourself and for others, and then self-esteem and getting serious about humor and having some fun in your life, fun and love in your life. And then on top of that, the happiness habit and developing a habit of gratitude, and abundance, and then not from a scarcity mindset, but from an abundance mindset, and discovering creativity in that sense. And healing from trauma is not a simple process, but as the experts will tell you, that it is something that is not linear. It's something that you have to cultivate within yourself for your resiliency factors. And then this is just a roadmap and a summary of what you need to be able to understand what is important to go and get the therapy, book your appointments with your doctor, and then with your therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, LSW, MSW. And then on top of that, if you guys want to go call in, you can. Call in 515-602-9765. And if you want to do a love offering, cash out, love offering, dollar sign, IMCC Coaching, dollar sign, Don Diva Coaching, dollar sign, Team Love Online, and then dollar sign, Top Radio Diva. And you can go to Top Radio Diva online at topradiodiva.com. And you can be able to do your donations in act in kind. And that's the power to do more and bring you fresh new content like that. And again, this is March Madness, Understanding Trauma PTSD Part 3. I want to make sure that our sessions are shorter and a little bit more condensed than everything else. And also to make sure that you guys get into a level of guilt and do an effective communication without boring you half to death on top of that. But I want you guys to understand how important and imperative this is to me and overcoming trauma and learning how to be a level of DBT and CBT and then on top of that ACT, integrating cell therapy and things like that to help you guys understand it a little bit more. So when we talk about all these different things, we think about managing the anxiety and then on top of the physical health issues associated with trauma and how people respond to trauma events. So we'll talk about that tomorrow alongside of all that and stress reduction. So I'll have that all together, and I'll be able to make sure that we have a short session just like we did today. I want to make sure that you guys are very engaged and enjoy yourself. Again, you can call in live 515-602-9765. If I don't answer, leave a message, and I'll hear it, and then I'll talk about it the next session. Again, it's Power to Do More. You're with Top Radio Diva. This is Cece, and I'm out. Take care.